Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2002. Two crucial tasks.
Hello. Last week, we ended our discussion of the rising tide of anti-Jewish feeling around the world with the optimistic thought that this may be the beginning of the end for the tribe that has caused so much misery and destruction for others. Some listeners have told me that I was being far too optimistic. They reminded me that the Jews don't really have to worry about the fact that many Europeans hate them. Every synagogue in France could be burned to the ground, and it wouldn't do much to shake Jewish power, which lies in the Jews' control of the U.S. government, which in turn depends on the Jews' control of the mass media of news and entertainment in America. The Jews always have been hated by every people among whom they have lived, and they haven't let that worry them much or cause them to change their behavior. In fact, there have been times when Jewish leaders welcomed the hatred directed against Jews by Gentiles because this hatred hindered assimilation and generated a stronger Jewish hatred of the Gentiles, along with a stronger Jewish feeling of solidarity. So, what is it about this new wave of anti-Jewish feeling that makes me think it really can lead to the end of Jewish domination of our society? First, I am not predicting anything specific. I just have a feeling, an intuition, based on several things that are happening now. Back in the 1960s and 1970s, when the Jews were really trashing American society, turning everything upside down and rearranging it to suit themselves, I was mostly an observer, first from the university campus where I was teaching, and later from Washington, D.C., where I finally began to write and to speak out. For the most part, I just watched from the sidelines while the Jews organized huge pro-black so-called civil rights demonstrations and equally huge pro-Viet Cong so-called peace demonstrations. I could see some very bad trends, some very dangerous and destructive trends being established. But of course, neither I nor anyone else could be certain where these trends would take us. Most of my colleagues at the university believed that we were merely going through a temporary social disruption and that things would settle down later. They weren't willing to do anything or to take a stand. In fact, in my own case, it wasn't until 1975 that I began writing my first novel, The Turner Diaries, in which I extrapolated the trends that I had been observing for well over a decade and predicted that they would lead to a long-term degenerative change in American society, and that this degenerative change was a deliberate consequence calculated by those promoting the trends. Now, other thinking Americans cannot evade the same conclusion that I reached in the 1970s. They can see what the Jewish push for uncontrolled immigration from the Third World has done to America. They know who it was that pushed through the big change in our immigration laws back in 1965. They can see what the Jewish promotion of feminism has done to the white birth rate in America. And they can understand that together these two things, non-white immigration and the lowered white birth rate, will lead very soon to the extinction of our race and the end of the civilization that our ancestors spent thousands of years building for us. They can experience every day the insanity of the multiculturalism endlessly promoted by the Jews through every medium under their control, from Hollywood to Madison Avenue, and forcefully imposed on us by our government. And they can see what it is doing to our young people. They can see the growing confusion and alienation and demoralization. They can smell the stench of the non-stop Jewish propaganda of equality and democracy and non-resistance and racial death being spewed onto us by the Jewish media during every hour of every day. Now, all of these things I've just mentioned have been with us for a while. They've been pushed and promoted and built up during the past 40 years. And for most of that time, they have not resulted in any great degree of resolve among thinking Americans to put up any resistance to what the Jews are doing. In fact, for most of that time, I kept hearing the same excuses for inaction. You can't blame all of the Jews for what a few Jews are doing. Or, there are Gentiles every bit as bad as the Jews, so don't try to blame it all on the Jews. And of course, there are Gentiles every bit as bad as the Jews. Worse, in fact, because on top of all their other crimes, they are traitors. They are collaborators. And in my eyes, there is no worse crime than collaboration with the Jews against our people. I am pleased to note that the Palestinians, at least, know how to deal with collaborators. And I can only hope that when the day of justice arrives in America, those Gentiles who have collaborated with the Jews will get their dose of justice first. So what's different now from, say, 5 years ago? Why do I believe that thinking Americans won't keep on making the same excuses and doing nothing as things continue to get worse and worse? Well, first, historical processes that may appear to be continuous in nature sometimes reach a tipping point. A person who evaded action for years suddenly decides he's had enough. And if many of the people around him also have become pretty exasperated, they may be influenced enough by his change of attitude to suddenly decide that they also have had enough. And when conditions are right, decisions of this sort can spread with explosive speed throughout a society, or at least throughout a stratum of society, because I'm still talking only about thinking Americans, not about the masses of Sally soccer moms and Joe six-packs who never think very deeply about anything. Certainly, we cannot make an exact analogy between France and the United States. There are many differences between the two societies. But we certainly have seen an explosive change in public attitudes in France in recent days. In France's presidential election last Sunday, the surprising electoral success of Jean-Marie Le Pen, who had been completely written off by the mainstream media and the French political establishment, certainly is not unrelated to the role of the Jews in France. France has the largest and most obnoxious Jewish population in Western Europe, and Le Pen has been repeatedly denounced by the Jews as an anti-Semite. I hesitate to say at this time that the historical process in France has reached a tipping point, but Le Pen's explosive gain in popularity tells us something about the changing attitudes of the French toward the Jews in their country. And these changes have been quite abrupt, suggesting a wave of exasperation spreading through the French public in the way I just described. Second, history always is full of surprises, surprises that not even the cleverest schemer could predict. And we've had a few of those recently. September 11th did a lot more than kill 3,000 Americans and wipe out some expensive real estate. It initiated a whole chain of unforeseen events, and we're still a long way from the end of that chain. I've already talked about some of these events stemming from September 11th. There was the very clumsy and transparent effort by the government and the media to deflect blame for the attack from the government's policy of unquestioning support of Israel. Every thinking American noticed and flinched when George Bush parroted the Jewish media line that he had no idea why America was attacked. It must have been because Osama bin Laden hates our freedom. It certainly had nothing at all to do with the government's support of Israeli aggression in the Middle East. Now, I already had been telling people for nearly 2 years that George Bush is a shameless liar, that he lies habitually, that he will say whatever the Jews tell him to say without embarrassment or shame. But most people took that with a grain of salt. They thought that I was exaggerating. But after September 11th, they understood that I wasn't exaggerating at all. They saw and heard the Jewish media telling the American public that the attack had nothing to do with U.S. support for Israel, that we would have been attacked even if the government weren't sending money and weapons to Israel, that the attack was based solely on the fact that Muslim fanatics hate our freedom. And then they saw and heard George Bush and Dick Cheney and John Ashcroft and all the rest parrot this Jewish lie, this obvious and unbelievable Jewish lie, without even blushing. They saw and heard various Jewish spokesmen announce that what the United States had to do now was wage war against Afghanistan and Iraq and Iran and any other country that didn't approve of what the Jews were doing to the Palestinians. The Jewish spokesman announced that we were a bunch of wimps if we didn't take out these countries now, that punishing the people who perpetrated the September 11th attack wasn't enough, that the only way to protect ourselves from future attacks was to go after everyone who didn't agree with our policy in the Middle East. And then they saw and heard George Bush and the rest chime in. There has never been a clearer demonstration of the degree of Jewish control over the U.S. government. Thinking Americans, and also thinking Europeans, are much more inclined to believe me now when I tell them that the U.S. government will do whatever the Jews tell it to do, that the politicians in the White House and in the Congress are totally irresponsible people who really don't care about anything except pleasing the Jews so that they can be reelected. The U.S. government will start another world war if the Jews demand it. It's not just the countries in the so-called axis of evil that Bush's Jewish speechwriters have him raving against that are in danger. It's everyone. We all are at risk when the world's greatest nuclear superpower is having its strings pulled by a bunch of arrogant megalomaniacs who believe that they are God's chosen people and can do whatever they want. That worries a lot of people, especially in Europe, but also in America. And it's not the sort of worry that will fade quickly. Once a thinking person has digested the reality of Jewish control of the U.S. government, he understands that something radical must be done to break that control. And he begins thinking about the whole nature of Jews and the way they behave, the way they operate collectively, the way in which they exercise control of a society. And what gradually takes shape in his mind is a new attitude toward Jews as Jews, not just as Zionists or as Israelis. He begins to understand that it is the Jewish community working as a whole that is the problem, not just a few Zionist Jews or a few media Jews or a few Jewish bankers. Well, this sort of thing has been going on in a cyclical sort of way for millennia. And always in the past, when public anger at what the Jews were doing reached the tipping point, the Jews were able to recover, regroup, and renew their assault against our people. In ancient times, the Egyptians ran them en masse out of Egypt. The Romans found them so troublesome that they were expelled en masse from the province of Palestine. And during the Middle Ages, at one time or another, they were expelled from every country in Europe, and from some countries several times. When they were run out of one country, they would bribe their way into another country that wasn't yet at the tipping point. Then after 25 or 30 years, that is after a generation, the people in the country they had been run out of would have forgotten why they had run the Jews out a generation earlier, and the Jews would come sneaking back in. Sometimes the cycle was much longer than a generation. King Edward the Great expelled all of the Jews from England in 1290 in order to calm the public unrest they were causing. And it was more than 350 years before they were able to get back in under Oliver Cromwell. But they did get back in. That was in the middle of the 17th century. And they've been gnawing away at British society for another 350 years since then. They have done at least as much damage in the United Kingdom as in the United States, pushing for non-white immigration and interracial marriage, promoting feminism and homosexuality, using the media to promote every sort of perversion and abnormality. But the Brits apparently are a pretty demoralized bunch, willing to tolerate even more abuse than Americans are, and I doubt that they are close to the tipping point yet. So again, why do I hold out more hope for the present cycle than for earlier cycles? For one thing, in the past, when the Jews got booted out of one country, there was always another country for them to go and regroup. The world is a much smaller place today. We are likely to see the whole white world tip at the same time. For another thing, once the thinking people, the independent-minded minority, has come to a general understanding of what the Jews are, what they are trying to do, and how they operate, it will not be as easy for them to forget as it was in the past. With universal literacy, with the internet and the laser printer, once the word is out, it will stay out. The principal obstacle in the way of a final solution to the Jewish problem is the lack of radicalism on the part of the majority of the people who now oppose the Jews. The conservatives in most countries were emasculated long ago and are a total loss. They oppose in their effete, limp-wristed way the policies of the Jews, or at least some of those policies, but they are so terrified of being denounced as anti-Semites or racists that they will not take a more general stand against the Jews. In Britain, for example, the Conservative Party is part of the chorus of those denouncing the second-place electoral showing of Jean-Marie Le Pen last Sunday and expressing hope that the corrupt system politician Jacques Chirac will defeat Le Pen in the runoff, as he almost certainly will. Leftists are a very large part of the current opposition to the Jews, but a majority of them are basing their opposition on the atrocious policies of the Jews in the Middle East. Their opposition generally goes a bit beyond mere anti-Zionism and includes exasperation with the tolerance of Jews outside Israel for Israeli atrocities, and with such things as Jewish media control and Jewish influence on governmental policies. But in most cases, their opposition to the Jews would disappear if Israel would disappear. And we should be realistic about people such as Jean-Marie Le Pen. He may be hated and even feared by most of France's 700,000 Jews because of his opposition to many Jewish policies. But he actually has a Jew in a position of authority in his political organization. If Le Pen actually gained power in France, and that is unlikely, he almost certainly would fight against many Jewish policies and might even slow somewhat the Jewish program for the destruction of the French people. But I doubt very much that he would make any radical moves against the Jews as Jews. He might even collaborate with the Jews in suppressing the very troublesome Muslim minority in France. He seems much more a conservative French nationalist than a far-sighted white racist. Our real hope for making this the final cycle lies with a minority of those now raising their voices against the Jews. This minority consists of those who really understand the Jews and have the correct motivation for opposing them, not as Christ killers, not as Zionists, not as international bankers, but as incurable corruptors and destroyers. This radical minority always has been around, but it is larger now than it has been in a long time. As I mentioned last week, the Jewish poll takers are saying that it is larger than it has been since the 1930s. I'm not sure about that, but it has been growing in recent decades as the destruction being wrought by the Jews on our society and our civilization has become more evident. The big new element in all of this is the groundswell of opposition to Jewish policies among non-radical elements, primarily the elements opposing Jews because of what they are doing in the Middle East. What we have now is an opportunity for synergistic action on the part of radical and non-radical elements, which we have not had since the Second World War. We already may be seeing some of this now, as liberal opponents of Israel push for more radical measures against Israel than they have in the past. Did the liberals all by themselves institute the boycotts of Israeli imports that are spreading across Europe now? In Europe, there is an initiative among academics and scholars to boycott Israeli academics. Did the academic liberals all by themselves launch this initiative? Certainly, radical white nationalists have an unprecedented opportunity to radicalize at least some of the non-radical opponents of Israel. Finally, we have the grassroots elements who are firebombing synagogues and beating up Jews in the streets. Many of these, especially in France, are Muslim immigrants angry at what the Jews are doing in the Middle East. But not all of them are Muslims. Some are young white nationalists, and some are young whites who are simply angry and alienated. And again, we have synergy. The presence in Europe of large numbers of angry Muslim immigrants who are there because of Jewish policies aimed at polluting Europe racially makes it easier for angry young whites also to express themselves on the Jewish question. The real key to building this opposition to the Jews into something with long-term viability lies, as with so many other important issues, in the effective use of communications media. As long as they are able to keep their stranglehold on the mass media in America, they can ride out almost anything, because they can keep the lemmings deceived and therefore can continue to control the government with its police and military powers. They can thumb their noses at Europe so long as they have the United States under their control. There are two things that, together, can finish them. One of these things is the breaking of their media stranglehold in America, and with it the spell they have over the lemmings. The other thing is an independent thinking elite that understands them and is morally and psychologically prepared to move against them when their media stranglehold is broken or weakened significantly. We are working now on both fronts. We are working to educate this elite, and the unforeseen upsurge of anti-Jewish feeling now sweeping the world is greatly facilitating this part of our task. We also are working as hard as we can to weaken the Jewish stranglehold on the mass media of news and entertainment by building alternative media and learning to use them effectively. Your support can help us greatly with both of these tasks, these crucial tasks at which we must not fail. Thanks for being with me again today.